This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Health and Living with me, T. Shaoik. It's our regular show with Dr. Rajini Sarvanandan, consultant developmental pediatrician today. And it is sort of the end of April, but we are still using this opportunity to commemorate World Autism Awareness Day. And a lot of those conversations have been happening throughout this month. And joining us in conversation today will be Nick Diddy, a parent to two autistic teenage girls, and we'll be hearing firsthand experiences and perspectives from Didi, the joys and challenges of parenting two neurodivergent girls, and we'll find out more, of course, about the support that parents need in this journey. So do call us with your questions or your thoughts if you are also part of this journey, something that you're going through and you'd like to share with us. You can call us at 03-7732-900. WhatsApp us on our U mobile number at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Dr. Rajini, thank you so much for joining us. How are you today?
Fine, thank you. Nice to see you again.
And Didi, joining us on Zoom. Thanks for being on the show with us as well. How are you?
Hi, I'm fine. Thank you.
But first, what we would like to start off the show with is actually some thoughts and some sharing from Didi's daughter, A, who is turning 15 tomorrow. It'll be her birthday tomorrow. So we want to wish her happy birthday as well. And I had asked her to share some thoughts with us where she could choose three words to describe herself. And this is what she had to say.
The only words I could describe myself is being different, because I'm not very sociable and talkable like a normal kid. That's why I couldn't make any friends. I feel unlikable because I used to think people would like me, but not anymore. Things changed. And I feel unfazed because I can't make any facial expression if I want to. But if I do, it looks too awkward.
So that was Didi's daughter, A. Again, she's turning 15 tomorrow. She talked about how she feels, she would use the words different, unlikable and unfazed to describe herself. And I guess that's a very realistic, representation of herself. But Didi, as her mum, how would you describe your daughter? Both of them, in fact.
Okay, A is turning 15 tomorrow. She's very quiet and like to be alone. But we do manage to get her to go out with us. But we need to give her, I would say, a week of notice, a week in advance. It's not like her to be spontaneous. It's not easy to just change the plan and say, hey, let's go out. Well, 30% of the time, she would agree to spontaneous plan. But most of the time, if it requires a day out, a day trip, more than a few hours, then definitely we need to provide her with information beforehand. While E, my second daughter, which is, I think she's 13, she's also diagnosed with autism. She's more loud. She's not quiet. She's loud. She's sweet. She likes attention. So it's definitely a different kind of autistic. So I have two different neurodivergent children.
It's just like having two different children, basically.
Yeah, definitely.
Exactly. Yeah. Exciting.
Yeah.
So both daughters, like you said, were diagnosed with autism or have been diagnosed with autism. Perhaps you'd like to take us through a little bit of that discovery process. What were the initial signs that led you to notice that they were both neurodivergent?
Well, of course, we didn't know since birth. And then they are 20 months apart, because the first year of A, she was a very nice, easy to manage baby. So that's why I decided I can do this. I can do this twice. So we planned for another baby. But when she was at 18 months, and I was already 7 months pregnant, too late to change the plan, right? So she started to show sign of difficult to calm herself. I mean, not just herself, like we try to calm her also, like with difficulty. She would cry for more than an hour. And we also realized that she wasn't speaking, but she wasn't using any words at all at 18 months. But of course, you know, being in our society, it's always like, oh, she was the only daughter, no other siblings in the house, no other children around. So it's quite okay if she didn't say much word, like it's kind of like expected. But when her sister was born, when she was 20 months old, we realized that she started to say words, but not in communication form. She could actually read, you know, like read words, sight words, simple words, and she could say all the words in the ABC books, like A, apple, B, everything. So we, of course, as a young mom, I tested her with different words, and she clearly could read, but she couldn't ask for milk. She couldn't call me mama, daddy, no communication, zero. But if I say, what's this? What's that? Like ask her to label things, she could do it very, very well. And she know colors, shapes. So when she was 2.5 years old, also like when the sister was born, we realized that she had no intention to connect with her sister. Like she was like, she ignored the sister like at all. If I was holding the younger sister, she would not come to me, she would not ask for attention, she would not cry, no bonding at all. So at 2.5 years old, I started to realize lah, that this is something different, this is not normal anymore. Like no, zero communication, you know. So we know that she's not, she can hear, she can say words, so it's weird lah, for me at that time.
And what about for your second daughter?
Second daughter, that's a funny story, because she was, I thought that she was a bit better than the elder sister. But one time she was admitted, I don't remember which of the girls were admitted, but of course, naturally, we just brought everybody to the ward, to the room, right? So the pediatrician, as he came to make the ward round, she looked at my younger daughter and she said, oh, you need to start her on therapy as well.
Okay.
So because it was a different presentation, you know, like it's not the same. We couldn't say like, I think like the adi also autistic. So that's why like it was a bit kind of like interesting story.
Right. Yeah. There's no template that you can follow, right?
No.
So Dr. Rajini, I think that must be something that many parents struggle with. How much of these are just variations of developmental milestones and how much of it is actually neurodivergence? What could you share here?
I think, you know, you highlighted really very important points with your first daughter, the fact that she could read early, and, you know, many parents would be very excited about that. She could say words, but she didn't use them to communicate. And quite often parents think that the first sign of autism is actually, you know, the lack of speech. But actually we say it's a lack of communication. So if your child's not pointing, your child's not gesturing, using signs to communicate with you, or using their eyes to communicate with you, or using their body to communicate with you, then we would say, okay, alarm bells need to ring. Even as early as 12 months. We're not saying we would diagnose at 12 months, but those are little warning bells that, you know, communication is key.
What about how people around Didi were telling her, you know, this is normal because XYZ, right? There's some sort of some cultural beliefs related to that.
I think it's not just cultural beliefs. I even know doctors who probably would have said to you, I'm not sure whether they would have said that to you, Didi, but, oh, she's, like you said, you know, first child, she has no siblings, probably just give her more time and it'll be okay. That may be true in some children who lack stimulation, but like I said, we need to look at other signs of communication. And I think you highlighted an important point. One of the things that concerned you was her lack of ability to calm herself down, right? And we know tantrums are common in toddlers, but those close to them, those family members should be able to, they should be able to seek comfort from that.
So very quickly, Didi, how did you go about seeking an assessment after that to confirm that, you know, these are not typical behaviors? And were there challenges that you'd like to highlight when it came to looking for sort of that diagnosis?
At that time, I just like tried to find find a specialist that can diagnose. I suspected autism already at that time, but then I don't know why I didn't ask the pediatrician who was seeing my children. I actually like looking for another specialist, someone with subspecialty. It was just one time assessment, but after that we went back to the pediatrician that we had been going to before, because somehow we didn't find it comfortable. Of course, it was just a provisional diagnosis, but the way the specialist telling us like, oh, this could be our fault, this could be it could be the iPad, but we only started giving the iPad like a month before the assessment, so it couldn't be the iPad. And then, of course, being autistic, they naturally like attracted to gadgets, right? So once you give to them, they're like, they would love it. So seeing that my child was with iPad, she said, oh, it could be the iPad. And then like saying all these things that make you doubt yourself, not make you blame yourself. Like, oh, did I cause this to my daughter? But funny thing was, when I went back to the pediatrician that we always seen, and I told him like, oh, we met this specialist. She thought that my daughter is autistic, and he said, Allah, tengok pun dah tahu. I was like, why didn't you tell us? Like, all this while we came for jabs, right? Like, mm-hmm. Every few months we came in for jabs. Sometimes we came in for fever and
yes,
everything.
Of course.
So, I don't know, probably like 12 years ago, it was not easy for pediatrician to say it to parents, mm-hmm. I think your child need more assessment. I don't know. It was a, that was another interesting story. So,
Did you feel let down?
Yeah, definitely. I of course, the first day of getting the provisional diagnosis, I was like blaming myself, trying to think like, what did I do wrong? Not just what did I do as a mom, what did I do as a human being? Is it is it like a punishment from God? Mm-hmm. So it was very hard, but of course we didn't go to the person, the petition who gave us the provisional diagnosis because of some insurance issues as well, some referral and everything. So we just stick to the pediatrician that we've been seeing. But of course, I felt like if you have like known this, why didn't you tell us earlier so that we can get earlier intervention? Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Did you mean, Dr. Rajini, whether Didi felt let down by the healthcare professionals who are there to actually provide guidance, not judgment? And
I think both. Did she feel let down by what you just said, the guidance, but also let down that you felt blamed in a sense?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, I understand that some kids, like you said, that the issues could be due to stimulation. Probably like after a few therapies, it would seem to be not to be autistic. It's just some stimulation lacking, right? But you don't know at the time, right? You don't know whether this is true autistic or not. So to say all those things to me, I felt like did I do it?
Okay.
All right. Yeah. Hang on to those thoughts. We will continue the discussion after a short break. On the show with me today are consultant developmental pediatrician, Dr. Rajini Sarvanandan, and Nick Didi, a parent to two autistic teenage girls. Do share your thoughts with us if you are on a similar journey as a parent yourself or a caregiver. 03-7733-2900. You can also WhatsApp our U mobile number 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Stay tuned to Health and Living, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Health and Living with me, T. Shaoik, and my guests on the show today, Dr. Rajini Sarvanandan, consultant developmental pediatrician, and Nick Didi, a parent to two autistic daughters who's sharing her personal journey with us today. Call us to share your thoughts or any questions you may have with regard to helping, guiding children, young ones who have been diagnosed with autism. It is a rocky journey ahead for you. So this is the time to share some of your thoughts or concerns. If you have any, 03-7733-2900. WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Earlier, when we started the show, we heard from Didi's eldest daughter, A, talking about how she saw herself. And here's a little bit more about her when I asked her to share about what she likes and dislikes.
The only thing I want the most is for other people to be more accepting to autistic people. I want to be more willing to accommodate others, like Eid, for example. And I want to be more independent when I'm older. But what I really don't like the most is that I wish I knew exactly what to say and not stutter every time.
So that was A talking about, I just asked her to just have a think about what she likes and dislikes. And then again, it came back to where she sees her differences as a neurodivergent person. And Dr. Rajini, I had a question that I wanted to address to you first before we ask Didi about what her daughters struggle with. There is a misconception that children who are autistic don't have, or children who are neurodivergent, in fact, don't have typical childhood needs, that they don't need socialization, making friends. They don't need to go to school. That expression of emotions or that sense of identity isn't as important to them. How would you address that?
Yeah, I think, over the years we've learned otherwise, right? I mean, if you look back 30, 40 years ago, people described autistic people as lacking in social interest and awareness. But actually now we know that actually sometimes it's heightened. And along the way, I think we know now that every child, whether, no matter how well they're functioning, they all go through the same feelings and emotions that other neurotypical people go through. You know, the same thing as they go through puberty, the sexual desires come in, wanting to be loved, wanting to be liked, all the same desires come through as well. So I think we have to understand that we're not dealing with, children who are, or even young adults who are completely different in their thought processes.
Mm. Didi, clearly your daughter also struggles with all those uncertainties and emotional ups and downs like any other teenage girl does. As we heard from her, she feels so much about not being liked or not being accepted. How do you address or balance those which are actually really typical needs of growing children while also addressing their specific needs related to autism?
Well, I come to realize that, as from our own experience, we tend to make friends with people who have the same interests as us, right?
Yep.
But we push our children, autistic kids, to just be friends with anybody. So it's very unfair. Mm-hmm. We just say that you have to make friends with your classmates. But when none of the classmates share the same interests, that could not happen at all. And my children both had been going through so many social skills program, you know, like how to make friends, like social circle and everything. But when they are the only one having the skills, but they don't have the person who they want to make friends to. It's not the same as like other kids, you know. Other kids don't want to make friends with them because they don't have the same interest. And being at the level of not intelligence, but you know how autism has different level and how centers provide education and therapies to the kids, right? So for my children who kind of like they can learn the typical curriculum but struggles in other things, so there's a gap on the schools, the kind of school that the kind of school that's suitable for them. Mm-hmm. And of course, there's also the question of cost as well. Like if you want to get shadow aid in a private school, that would cost even more. Yeah. So lack of option as well kind of like make them have limited social circles that they can join. So me and my husband really have to think on how, what kind of circles to let the girls join. You know, it's not just schools, probably like art class, probably like other, probably swimming school, those kind of settings. Because if we just hope that they will get friends from school, then it's very difficult. And we are very aware of that how my children, they hardly connect with other kids. But they do actually. In the previous school, A actually had this one boy who, the boy was very nice to her lah. But of course, she doesn't think that the boy was his best friend. But interesting enough, the boy is also autistic. So you see, it's same, not same interest, but it's not.
They share something, right?
Yeah, they shared something. That's what I mean.
Yeah, and that brings me to a question, Didi. You know, I often get parents saying to me, oh, I want my child to go to a normal school, and I'm doing these inverted commas, because I want my child to pick up good behaviours. If I send my child to a special school or a school which has more children with different needs, then my child's going to pick up those behaviors. I have a script that I give parents, but I want to ask you as a parent whether you went through these thoughts and how you changed your mindset. I mean, clearly you've seen the light, so to speak.
Well, if immersion by being with typical kids would rub off to autistic children to have all this desired behavior, as you might call it, then why would the kids need therapy in the first place?
Thank you.
But of course, because services for autistic kids are not as many as we wish it to be. So that's why the different programs, the more tailored program to cater different needs, has not been established very, very well, and of course, very hard. I mean, in terms of cost and everything. So yeah, that it's a challenge. I truly understand why parents that who has children with level 1 or level 2 autism would be reluctant to send to proper EIP centers or like vocational centers for autistic.
Speaking of therapy, Didi, I imagine that just getting a diagnosis itself didn't mean that, you know, problem solved, now I know what it is, right? There was the long road that actually came after it. What did you want from these interventions or therapies for your daughters? What did you seek from them, from these services for them? And how did you do it without, I mean, this was 15, 13 years ago, with much less awareness and access to such services. How did you do it without a structured framework to guide you?
Well, if you ask me like a few years ago, I would say that I wish all the intervention would make my children close the gap. But now we know that it's not about closing the gap, because they are what they are. Our path, our trajectory is not the same anymore. We can't like make them normal. So it's all about giving as much skills as they can and hoping for the best so that they can fulfill their potential, be the best version of themselves. As for the pathway, of course, it was a struggle because when we look through the internet, all the information are also scattered. And also, of course, as I said again and again, limitation by the cost of things, you know, like classes can be very expensive as well. We are talking about by the hour. What helped? We did get financial help from my husband's company, where it's a GLC company, where they provide. They paid for the fees for some of the therapies, so that helped a lot. And of course, the thing that helped is how I bonded with the therapist. So we had relationship more than just therapists and parents. Mm-hmm. So I even befriended them, so they guide me on like what to do, what kind of school to pick. So I think that's how learn making partnership with the therapist, with the doctors, that helped. And mm-hmm. then also, of course, making friends. When you wait for the kids, when they attended therapies, when you were outside mm-hmm. the therapy room, right, you make friends with other parents.
Mm-hmm. And that's then why you build up your support system.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm. So can I ask, what you've described is that what I take from that is, yes, you sent your kids for therapy, but I'm also hearing that you spent a lot of time trying to learn things on your own to be able to help your kids. And how easy was it for you to pick up those skills as a mother to be able to help your children?
We attended parents' classes. And bless my husband, he is very supportive. He even paid for courses, workshops that cost thousands. And there was one time he even sent me to Australia to learn something on autism. So bless him. I think he kind of like, because I'm a stay-at-home mother. I'm taking care of my children full-time. But I think he acknowledges that even like being a mother, just driving the kids, I needed more than that. I needed more input to decide on what are the things that my children needed. Mm-hmm. And also, I think it's a good stimulation as well, right? Right? Mm-hmm. To really learn something officially and like being among psychiatrists, pediatrician as well. So I think it helped with my self-esteem and confidence to decide on things for my children.
Dr. Rajini, sounds like on every level, every step of the way, a parent like Didi is just, they're just finding their ways, on their own initiative. Mm. I understand that services perhaps are getting a little better now, but we're probably nowhere near seeing a sort of ecosystem that is there for parents to fall back on very, very naturally, right?
Yeah, and I think what's lacking in our ecosystem, and correct me if I'm wrong, Didi, is parent training. You know, I see post-pandemic a mushrooming of a lot of centres where, I was just talking to one parent today and he said, oh, I've been for so many different assessments, but I don't feel comfortable and I don't know how, I don't get the right vibe. And I said, what do you mean by the right vibe? And, he said to me, I just, there's some certain places I go to and they go in with my child and I don't even know what's happening. And that in a sense is something that concerns me, because the rest of the world is moving towards family-centered interventions, getting parents more involved. But I feel here in Malaysia, we're still very much separating therapy from family, whether or not it's the insecurity of professionals or it's just the way we've been trained, I'm not sure. But Didi, as a parent, you know, what do you think? How should we as professionals change the way we work? You know, I'm not just talking about us doctors being better at imparting diagnosis, giving parents the right sort of messages, but just generally as professionals working with neurodivergent people, how should we be doing it differently here in Malaysia?
You have to build connection with the parents because there was one time, this one private center owner actually asked me like, oh Didi, I felt like this, like with parents like being difficult and everything. So I said, you have to be nice to the parents because they are the paymaster. They are the one who decide. Yeah, they are the one who decide whether to keep sending their kids to your center or not. And that's why you have to make them realize how important it is, what are you doing, why your kids need this and that. Because it's a business, and for the for the government sector, for the government hospital, you know, you also have to involve the parents because it was hard to get appointment. The appointment is far in between, and it was hard to get to each hospital because of the parking and then to get leave. And everything, so many challenges. Yeah. But if you don't make the parents feel that it's important, it's beneficial to bring the kids to the therapy, they wouldn't want to come again. It's such a hassle and they don't see the improvement. They just see the hardship and they just refuse to come again. Mm. So it's a loss for everybody then.
Mm. Yep. What I'm hearing is the importance of parents and families being able to feel that this is going to be a space where their children's needs will be acknowledged, right? And that parents have that sort of sounding board to figure out challenges as they go along. Not just, I'm paying for this service and it will be delivered to me. Mm. It's a lot more than just a transaction. We'll go for another quick break and come back to continue. I would like to hear more from Didi after the break about how she has been talking to her daughters about their autism diagnoses and how have they all been navigating puberty together. I think that's another big challenge and conversation there. Call us or share your thoughts with us via WhatsApp. The number to call is 03-7733-2900. The number to WhatsApp is 018-789-8899. Or you can tweet us at BFM Radio. On the show with me, consultant developmental pediatrician Dr. Rajini Sarvanandan and Nick Didi, a parent. We'll be right back on Health and Living, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Health and Living with me, T. Shaoik, and my guests, consultant developmental pediatrician, Dr. Rajini Sarvanandan, and Nick Didi, a parent with two teenage girls who are autistic. You can call us with your questions or thoughts, 03-7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, or tweet us at BFM Radio. Didi, how did you approach discussing your daughter's diagnoses with them? At what point did you decide it was the right time, and how did you help them come to that sense of self-acceptance?
A few years ago, we had to apply. We should have applied earlier, but I find it rough at the point that we needed an OKU card to get assistance. So I told A that, okay, I'm going to apply this card. It's called OKU card. This is for people with disability. And you already know that you have autism. So are you okay that I'm getting this card for you? And she was like, she has her own laptop and I could see actually her search history on Google. Definitely after that, she Googled, is autism a disability?
Right.
She did. So we had to discuss about it in a few days, you know, because she couldn't process in a day. She was like, are you sure? Am I stupid? Does autistic mean that I'm stupid? So I had to tell her that, yeah, it's a disability. I did not sugarcoat by saying, no, it's not a disability. It's a difference. You're just different. You're not disabled. How can I say that? I'm applying OKU card for her, right? Mm-hmm. So I couldn't like say it otherwise. So I explained to her that autistic like this, autistic has potentials as well. People are different. People are have different strengths. You may have difficulties in communication and everything, but I've been sending you to therapy since you were mere 3 years old. So we've been doing it for so long. We are working on it. I'm still helping you. I'm here to help you with anything that you need. So it was a long talk, and it took several, not just a week, it took several weeks for her to feel okay, to finally accept that, okay, yeah, I have a disability. I'm autistic and it's a disability. So there's no way to say it in one go. And as for my younger daughter, a few times I asked her, do you know that you're autistic? There were times that she said, oh, my autism is in the Autism Malaysia office. I was like, do you even understand? And I asked again, do you know that you're autistic? Yeah, my autistic is in my nose. So she was not clear what autism is, but she was not concerned on how people perceive her differently, not as A, because E is more, look at me. Her attitude is like what is happening with herself rather than what is happening around her. So we haven't had the chance to, no, I tried, but haven't gone through her yet. Like she didn't like, you know, and although I did say that, oh, you know, with OKU card, you get discounts here and there. But of course, that's not the main point of getting the card. But I did show, like, when, for example, when we went to the airport where we needed to travel somewhere, I told her that, see, with this OKU card, you get this butterfly effect service. This is how other people are accommodating you. Mm-hmm. You get a privilege to have this access to some services. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, highlighting things here and there and being open to discuss whatever concerns that they have. Lah. That's the way I did it.
So can I ask you, Didi, if you hadn't been applying for the OKU card, would you have started the discussion anyway with your daughters? Or did they bring it up in any way along the way? Like, why do I have to keep going for therapy or...
More to my eldest daughter, she did ask like why she's different, and at one point she even said to me, Mama, I know I'm not the daughter that you had hoped for. So that was very hard for me to counter, to reassure her that despite the diagnosis and everything, all the things that we've been going through, we appreciate her, we love her unconditionally, and she has good qualities as well. It's not all about deficit, you know, like all the disability that is not that. So, yeah.
Can I ask about going through puberty with them now that they are 15 and 13? What have been some things you've had to talk to them about, and, you know, probably learning new skills for yourself as well?
You know, standard three, at that time, A went to a typical mainstream class, so she was in standard three. So in this PJK textbook, the Pendidikan Jasmani and Kesihatan textbook, the first chapter was about puberty, period. So she came back that day while I pick her up from school, right? She went to the car and she was like, Mama, I'm going to die. The thought of bleeding, right?
Yes.
So she was like, Mama, I'm going to die. So I, because they've been going to see psychologists frequently at that time, every other week. So of course, we discussed with the psychologist, and then we were lucky that the psychologist had a team of intern joining the sessions as well. So it was not one-to-one. It's like a group of young ladies. Mm-hmm. So they took her many sessions to help her not being traumatized by that. And then so many steps. It was not just one session. It was like many steps, took many years as well. And by the time she was 11, she was like asking me, Mama, when is it going to happen? Mm-hmm. She was totally ready. so it was nice. That one, I think she had enough preparation. But for E, she had preparation as well. Of course, we learned that, okay, 9 years old is a good time to start talking about it, to start like going through it, practice at home and everything. When she got her first period, I screamed because I was not ready. And she asked me, Mama, why did you scream? But we just laugh about it. Because she got it a bit earlier than the elder mm-hmm. sister. Mm-hmm. But she had, the younger sister had problem in terms of when she has her period, she felt uncomfortable, she would be cranky, and she would say that, like, how icky it is. So what I did, whenever she complained, because she even said, why am I a girl? Mm-hmm. So why am I don't want to be a girl anymore. So
I know that feeling. What I did,
So
You've had three girls, Dr. Rajini. Yeah.
So what I did was, I was like, you're right, it is icky. I don't like it as well. So mm-hmm. I validated her emotion mm-hmm. and I like helped her, calm her. So now it became easier for both of them.
What's really amazing, Didi, is that you are handling raising two autistic girls the same way that parents are trying to raise typical teenagers as well. You're open with them, you're talking to them, you're validating, and I think that's what most modern parents are trying to do as well, regardless of whether or not they're neurodivergent. I want to quickly bring up a question from a listener on WhatsApp. Puan Shima is sharing that she has a son aged 14, first diagnosed with ADHD, later diagnosed with mild autism. And he is now a PPKI student. Mm-hmm. But Puan Shima is asking, what is the fastest treatment so that I can have a chance to send my son to a normal class instead of PPKI because he feels like he's not learning? Dr. Rajini, would you like to share some thoughts here?
There's no fastest treatment. And I think, you need to sit down and see where the gaps are. And, I think it's also important for children to sort of, he's 14, that learning doesn't only take place in school. Or learning in the sense of academic learning doesn't always take place in school. Learning can take a different form in schools. You learn different aspects of it. And I think the first thing I would address is not how we're going to quickly close the gap, but I would go speak to her son and see what is it that he's frustrated about. If it's the fact that, he knows a lot more than the other friends, maybe talking to the teachers about, what if I provide some activities or learning materials for my son to do in school, or giving him more responsibilities in school so he feels that sense of, I'm worth something, right? Mm. And makes him want to go to school. Because there's a lot that you can learn from school, and a lot of the academic learning can take place outside school as well.
Mm.
But if you're looking for fastest treatment, there isn't such a thing. I mean, Didi, I don't know, you as a parent can address this.
Your child's emotion and happiness is the most important thing.
Yes. Mm. And I think that's the important thing, sitting down and communicating with him. And, if a child is struggling, then we help them where we can.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not to satisfy what we want.
Or some standards that society has.
Yeah. And I think probably for him, maybe he's reluctant to attend school, not because of just that he's bored, but there may be other issues. Like he feels, why am I different? Why can't I be like the other boy in Form 2 who goes to school and can take part in different things? So this is where more communication with school about getting him included, say, in co-curricular activities with the other children in the class, Badana, as a start.
We also had another question earlier from a listener asking, it was a very general one, but maybe Didi can share your personal perspective. What happens when autistic children grow up to be adults? And clearly they become autistic adults. It's not like it disappears. But Didi, what are you trying to prepare your children for when they cross that threshold?
Of course, looking at what they eat these days, I'm like, you have to find a job that can, like, you know, can make you afford all these things. So we're looking at strength base, of course. A had clearly said that she wants to be a voice actor. So looking into that, like how to get it, whether she's going to go to college or not. We've been looking at the requirement to get into college. We discussed with her, telling her that, oh, you need to do all these subjects if you are going to college. But also we're open if she's not going to college and trying to find courses, you know, like to get into what she wants. As for E, she likes art. So we are exploring like whether she would do arts in, you know, producing products with her arts. So those things, we really have to think out of the box, not think of all, like when we grow up, you know, like different times, and we are typical where, okay, you do your SPM, you go to college, you get university degree, and then only you get a job. So with having a neurodivergent, we just have to be creative and how to realize these potentials, this thing is to learn from those who had gone through all these things before. Mm-hmm. That's why you need to be in the community. You need to learn from the experience of other people. Mm. Don't just like think on your own, like you know, trying to come up with your own ideas, because everybody had, some people had done it before. So you just have to learn and, you know, tweak a bit and see what is applicable to your own children.
Mm. And in conjunction with Autism Awareness Day this month, Didi, what is your message for listeners about autism?
Keep the conversation going. Talk about your children to your own community, to your own families and friends. Let people know what you need. Because all this while, we've been sending our children to therapy to fix them, which is like, you don't need to fix them. They are just different. We're just giving them more skill. But we also have to think about providing a better environment for them so that they can thrive, they feel comfortable. Not that they just need to like survive in the harsh world, you know, like all the sounds, all the sensory stimuli. If we can make the world a bit more comfortable for them, I'm sure you will find them interesting to be around with.
Yep. Dr. Rajini, any final message?
You know, I want to share what one of my patients, as I was saying bye to him when he was 18, said to me, and this was soon after the pandemic, so I'd stopped dyeing my hair, so I clearly looked like I'd aged 10 years in the short time that he, you know, in that 1 year that he hadn't seen me. And one of his parting notes was, you know, for me to look after myself and that he would be okay and that he was going to take care of, you know, his parents. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, I think a lot of our conversations beforehand was about how we were going to help him manage his anxiety, right, and things like that. But, you know, the fact that he said to me, please look after yourself and don't fall sick, a thing associated with my aging, tells us something. Yes. That, you know, as long as we give them that confidence that we know we're there to support them, all our kids, neurodivergent or not, will do well in this world.
Mm. And I think everything in our conversation today has been about breaking down all the stereotypes and misconceptions and misunderstandings about autistic individuals. And again, here we will end the show with a message from A, Didi's eldest daughter, and what she would like people to know about being an autistic individual.
This isn't deep in opinion, but a straight out fact. Not all autism are the same things. Some can talk, some cannot. And we don't space out all the time. It's not like we're dumb or anything. There's only one thing I want the most, which is to be accepted as a human, not being labeled as different just because I'm autistic.
And on that note, thank you to A for sharing those thoughts with us. And thank you to Didi, as well as Dr. Rajini, for being on the show with us today to commemorate World Autism Awareness Day. This has been Health and Living on BFM 89.9.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.